Hey, this is Kent here at MindChange, and we will be having a Q&R episode coming up soon. We'd love to respond to your questions in this audience-driven episode, so please send them to podcast@mindchange.com. When you send in your questions, please attach an audio recording of it, stating your name, where you are from, and then clearly asking your question for us. Please also transcribe your question in written form on the email when you send it in. We look forward to hearing from you.
The consumption or restriction of food, that's just not the answer.
Okay, wellness. What's the answer?
It's emotional wellness. It's holistic wellness. You get your mind right, which gets your nervous system right, which allows your body to do rest and digest at times. You will digest food just fine.
Welcome to the Mind Change Podcast. I'm your host, Heather McKean, speaker and author of the bestseller, Mind Change, and creator of the Mind Change Method. Out of the ashes of my own healing journey, I became an armchair expert in the mind-body connection and the neurobiology of trauma. Using the methods we will discuss on this podcast, we have helped countless people transform issues that previously seemed impossible to overcome. Each week, we'll dive deep into the strategies, insights, and success stories that will inspire and equip you to harness the power of your mind, body, and spirit in order to create the life of your dreams. Together, we are changing the world, one mind at a time.
Welcome back to the Mind Change Podcast. I'm your host, Heather McKean. And today, joining us again is going to be Kent. So welcome.
Thanks.
And we're going to be discussing the emotional, neurological, and neurobiological symptoms behind food allergies.
There have been a number of requests over the last year or so about like, hey, can you talk about food allergies or intolerances or how this comes into play with mind change, or even questions of like, can you overcome an allergy and where they come from and all of these different things. So rather than it just being a shorter emotional driver type thing, we thought it could be a little bit of a conversation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is something, and we've danced this dance.
Wait, what are you talking about? You think that we've used food as like the powers outside of us kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like talking about something that we have personal experience with.
Yeah, so, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And of course, this episode is going to do what we often do, which is take a very atypical approach to the conversation, because I think it would be really easy to demonize and blame and very accurately question our food system or question our choice in diet or the standard American diet. And so right out the gate, I'm going to say there is a problem with our food source. Sure. There's a problem
with the soil. There's a problem with what we're eating. What
glyphosate, we're putting in our body. Yes. Like those, this is real. There is an issue with the way that most of our corn is processed. There's an issue with the way most of our wheat is processed. There are issues with dairy that go beyond just there being whey and casein and lactose and everything like that. Though there are issues with those things, we still come down to that age-old observation that we've got a bunch of different people living in this same society, living in the same places in the world, eating the same foods in the same environments, maybe not home environments, but cultural environments. And some people develop allergies and some people don't, or intolerances.
Siblings, right? Like siblings will, that is the same home environment seemingly, yep, at least, you know. And so, yeah. And so this episode is, as Heather was saying, like the point is not to talk about those problematic things with our food in general, but to go a little bit deeper beyond that. This is not us necessarily sharing like, this is what, how we think you should eat. Like, that's not what Mind Change is about. We have our own thoughts. Everyone has their own opinions, and that's great for everyone. But what's important is how we are digesting our beliefs and feelings around the food and everything else. So,
well, really, it's about our relationship with nourishment and with what we're bringing in that is supposed to nourish our body and that we're supposed to be able to digest and that is supposed to bring us health that is no longer doing that. Food is, for a lot of people, and this was, again, in our own family, this was the beginning, some of the beginning stages of dealing with the cascade of diseases and symptoms and everything in our own lives.
Sure. I mean, to break it down easily, just very quick, it started for you as gluten intolerance. And then, well, I mean, there was a lot of other stuff when you were growing
up. Yeah, I never tolerated dairy
ever. Dairy, gluten intolerance. Then you like, and you systematically went off of different things over time, right? And it was, this is obviously before your Mind Change journey, but going off of gluten and then going off of dairy and then going off of like
sugar.
All sugar and then all grains and then going off, like you basically, at one point I was like, what do you eat?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I did that to our family too.
Right.
I started doing that with any symptom. It was, oh, it's food. It's something you're eating. It's something we're eating. It's, you know, I'll talk about that even more. There's a margin of control involved in that.
And you've done, you know, just for our audience, like you've many, many, many years ago did the yo-yo dieting, did the, you know, you did keto, you did this, you did that, like all of these different things. Often though, what you maybe didn't recognize, and this is what a lot of people do, is that we are, again, it's that whole out thing, or it's the whole thing about outsourcing the power within with our food. Mm-hmm. So if I eat this way, if I do this and cook it this way and yada, yada, then I will feel, then I will be, then I will. So.
And for me personally, this isn't everybody who does food allergies and intolerances, but for me, it was fitting into one of the programs of like doing it right. Mm. There is a right way. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out the right way, then you're going to be good. And then good things will happen to you. So there was that program behind some of the food allergy intolerances and everything that I was doing.
And I, especially at that point, I was very, I'd say for a good portion of our marriage, very impressionable. And you are a very like, you're a force to be reckoned with. And so when Heather has an opinion, especially back then, I was like, oh yeah, no, that's true. And that must be true. And I really came on board. The reason I'm bringing this up is because, you know, it eventually got to the place where this is where it's like our belief system creates what we hold within, where all of a sudden I had no issues with food growing up or anything. And like, oh, now I'm sensitive to dairy. Now I'm sensitive to gluten. Now I'm sensitive to all of these different things. And we did the blood type diet and we did the, you know, all of these different things.
Guys, if it's out there, and it has to do with food. We did it.
Yeah.
This was all before Mind Change.
Yeah.
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 And hey, I was being supported by doctors, like functional medicine doctors, all sorts of doctors and books that you read and people that you follow. And everyone's saying this is the problem and that's the problem. And if you go off this and if you go off that. And I think that that is speaking to a cultural issue, a systemic issue of lack versus abundance. And so it's what else can we take away and what else can we take away and what else can we take away? And very frequently behind food allergies and intolerances is this idea of a neglect in some way from childhood, abandonment in some way. I am not getting what other people get, have, receive. And that then translates into our relationship with food. So then, of course, we're now taking more away. So you might say that someone, I'll just take my own childhood where I could have said, you know, I felt starved for nurturing, for various things, sometimes even actual food. And that starvation, that lack in childhood, which I had no control over, no say over. Mm-hmm. In adulthood, I recreated that environment on my own.
Right.
Of lack, of basically starvation again. I can't have, I can't have, I can't have.
And it went beyond food, obviously, as well.
Sure. But food's really one of those first places. Mm-hmm. Almost anyone out there who's doing chronic illness and has been on a chronic illness journey, I can almost guarantee they went through the food intolerance, food allergy, stop eating this, stop eating this, stop eating this.
Yeah, strict.
Yeah.
Dieting of sorts.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that there are foods out there that we probably shouldn't be putting in our mouths.
Right. That's not to be like, well, as long as you clean up all of this stuff from your past and all this other thing, go eat gravel and garbage and oils. And like, no, we're not saying like everything's, but there's components to our past and everything else.
And basically it's the idea that there's something wrong with our body.
Mm.
My body isn't able to X, Y, Z. And that's, again, a deeper belief system of that we are, once again, looking at our bodies, looking at ourselves, and there's a dissociation from our body. My body can't digest. My body can't handle this. And we're now separated from ourselves again, but seeing our body as the problem. And so that journey of food restriction plays into that program or pattern that's already there. And again, it's very well supported out there. This is you. Something's wrong with you. I guarantee there's a doctor or a, you know, functional medicine person or a influencer or
nutritionist
or somebody who's going to say that the reason you are doing this, the symptom is there, is because of this particular food. And it'll be 50 different possible foods, right? So, and then you'll go on an entire protocol and then you'll maybe, and this is what happens. This is the problem. People generally initially feel better.
Yeah. I mean, there are legitimate, like you cut certain things out and those foods could and can cause inflammation. So there's going to be less inflammation, or you cut this out and sure, it's going to be what you're eating is easier to digest, or there are truths in those things. So you're going to find some results.
More often than not, what I see with anything, you take therapy, you take a SSRI, antidepressant, protocol, whatever. So often the initial relief is placebo. Now, placebo is a good thing. So I'm not saying the placebo is a negative thing. But very frequently, these are people who have not invested in themselves, didn't feel worth it, valuable in various ways. And this allows them to be giving themselves some attention, some margin of attention. Now it's because they're quote unquote broken or their body's not working or whatever. But that initial investment into, hey, I think I'm trying something for me that might work, oftentimes creates a placebo effect that it's just giving yourself something. It's just, even though with food stuff, you're taking things away from yourself, but there's a relationship like with that usually that is, okay, now I've got this. So initially there's a peak in feeling a little bit better. Over time, generally the things return, or you have to stay on this extraordinarily restrictive diet to not have those things get you. And again, that's outsourcing. We're outsourcing the control to the diet, to the food, to the protocol. And that's taking away our own agency and sovereignty and power. And so that's another part of the song and dance that we get with food intolerances and allergies.
Hmm. Okay. So kind of moving right along here, I like where we're going. It seems like more and more people are feeling like their bodies have betrayed them in some way, right? So this idea of like betraying them when it comes to food. So is this maybe not betrayal? Is it maybe a message?
Well, of course it is. I mean, that's what we're all about, right? Is that the body's trying to speak to us. Mm. Listen, we eat a lot of non-food stuff these days, and that's a problem. But there's a lot of food that we've been eating and digesting and dealing with as a main source of our food for thousands of years. So what's going on?
That all of a sudden,
yes,
right, again, taking out the whole like the soil and the this and the that and the hormones and all the stuff that's pumped into things that people eat. But
right. But 50 years ago, it was so rare to meet someone with a food allergy, with like a or an intolerance. It was extraordinarily rare.
Do you believe that's just because people are more aware of things now? Or do you believe, no, this is like legitimate. Like people didn't have these issues.
People did not have these same issues with anaphylactic responses and with gut health stuff. Like that, we were not seeing that 50 years ago.
Right.
So there's been an increase in all of that. Now, watch any of my episodes on anything to deal with the gut. So much stuff about the gut is that we've been separated from our intuition, from our real power. Everything's asking us to outsource. And that is a lot of what's happening in the gut. And so we can do chicken and the egg there. It's like, well, if we're separated from our intuition and we're giving our power all the way out there to whatever, mm-hmm. then that creates that permeability that everyone's talking about right now. And that we have that disconnect, then we can't receive and digest nourishment because we're not really from ourselves being able to say what's good, what's not good. So there's a whole story to that. I will also say something that's very real is our overuse of antibiotics. So our relationship with antibiotics over the last 50 years has been tragic. And we know that antibiotics and even painkillers such as Tylenol, anything, Advil, any of those, ibuprofens, yeah. whatever, wreak havoc on our microbiome in our gut. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we can be like, okay, yeah, well, then it's the antibiotics and it's the, but why were people getting more infections? Why are people getting more sick? Why are people in more pain? Mm. That's having everybody have Tylenol or Advil or aspirin or something that they're just popping it. That did not used to be the case. It was very rare to be taking those things. So again, chicken or the egg. My opinion, which I think there's a lot of research to support, is that we've gotten further and further away from actually releasing trauma in healthy ways. We're less connected with nature. We're less connected with family. We are indoors, inside, not moving our bodies very well. And there is some natural release when we're doing these physical things with our body. So we're tighter and tighter and tighter, which means we're holding on to these things. And people used to be in family structures and communities where they did talk, where a lot of this stuff was being able to come out right away after it happened. So it was witnessed, it was processed, and it was let go. That is happening less and less and less and less and less. We, rather than talking about it or dealing with it, we medicated it. So of course that's going to have a profound impact on our gut. So there is a relationship there. But again, this has been the entire population. So we have some people that we can sit right, they can eat anything and they don't seem to have any problems. And yet we have this sort of subset of people that are doing food allergies and intolerances pretty significantly. And so
you got any stats on that?
How many people?
Yeah, just like statistics over time.
Okay, so according to the CDC, over the last, let's say, 13, 15 years.
Okay.
Food intolerances and allergies in children have gone up 50%. 50%.
So in the last 15-ish years.
And the last information was like 2011. Oh. I think now. So if we're seeing a 50% increase in a 15-year period, and that was 15 years ago,
okay.
Imagine I don't have the recent data on that, but it's probably astronomical. These are huge numbers when we're talking about research. Like things moving decimal points are usually big in research. 50% increase in children. Oh my goodness, that is huge. Mm. Huge, huge, huge. And so something's amiss. Something's going on.
Okay.
And in adults, it's like about 10%. So then we've got adults who are eating these things for their whole lives, and now all of a sudden they can't eat something. Something happened. We need to track that. Something happened. There's something more going on here.
Okay, so why? Like, why is this happening now? And you mentioned, 50 years ago versus now, but like, what's so significant about happening now? Why are so many people reacting to foods we've eaten for, as you said, generations, thousands of years? Like, what's the deal?
So let's take it sort of a meta narrative, which is our bodies are not able to. So if we take polyvagal theory, the fight, flight, or freeze response, and we go a little bit deeper into that, there's this idea of rest and digest.
Mm-hmm. Parasympathetic nervous system. Yeah.
It's a regulated nervous system. So literally we actually cannot digest emotions or food if we're not in this state of peace. And that's from a nervous system perspective. So if we take that, then what we understand is that there are a lot of people in emotional dysregulation, nervous system dysregulation. Now, that doesn't just come from nowhere. Hmm. Nervous system dysregulation comes from subconscious programming that is playing things constantly that makes someone feel like they stay in survival mode. Even if they were in some sort of survival mode as a child, they're no longer as an adult, but the subconscious mind is holding those old stories and replaying them and replaying them. And so even in adulthood, we are still in a state of fight or flight or freeze if we're in the shutdown. And that isn't going to allow us to digest properly. So that's just physiological right there. So that tells me people are not being taught how to deal with their trauma, what's going on, the memories that are stored. Even if someone doesn't relate to the word trauma, but they have hardships that happened in their childhood that they think made them stronger or they have some sort of story about, it's still there and it's still playing. And if it is, it's keeping your nervous system stuck.
Right. Because just for our audience to, and many people may already know this, but the subconscious mind, the majority of the brain, not the frontal cortex, but like when we think about our thoughts, we can think about the past and the present and the future and all of those things. But in general, your brain, if you have something stored from your past and you recall it in your brain and body, it thinks it's happening now, like you can hold on to this thing from your past and it's like, oh, this is, I've overcome this or I've done this or that's how it used to be. But if it's not, as you said, like filtered out and released, then it's still in there.
And listen, I did a whole podcast about this very recently, but now there's this huge approach of trying to get your nervous system to regulate. Like that's all the buzz right now.
Which is important.
For sure. Somatic work and nervous system. But what you're doing is you're asking a nervous system to come into regulation when the subconscious mind, which is really basically running the show, is still replaying traumatic events. Mm. And so it would be out of alignment to have my nervous system trying to be regulated while traumatic things are playing in my head subconsciously. That's actually out of alignment. To me, dysregulation in the nervous system is telling us there are things playing out in the subconscious mind that need to be resolved first.
Okay. So then here we are, we're talking about food. So you're saying in one sense, like food, even though, again, we're always putting this out there, there are issues with the way that people eat now and what we have in our food and blah, blah, blah. But even with that or not with that, food, you're saying, is not the real trigger, is not the deeper issue. Again, not saying like eat junk and everything's fine, but like the deeper issue is something bigger than the food.
Yes.
Food's the maybe the messenger or the symptom, but there's something deeper.
So let's approach the adult connections. So some of the adult drivers for food intolerances and allergies. So this is some of the common things that we would see in an adult who's doing these food allergies or intolerances. Okay. One of the primary things is they have we'll just call it an imbalanced relationship with nurturing, safety. Something in their childhood frequently, and really depending on which allergy it is and the gender that we might be dealing with, there can be some more hints and everything there. Women are way more common to have food intolerances and allergies, but men are on the rise. Mm. So having issues with a primary caregiver or an early childhood experience where you didn't get enough of nurturing, or there was, so we can talk about this through attachment theory, right? So any of anything but loving attachment, so disorganized attachment, or, you know, all of the other sort of what we might reference negative attachments, anxious attachments, these create a imbalanced relationship with our nurturing, with our love, with the emotional food, if you will, that we're given. Most people understand that infants will die if they don't get emotional love, connection, attention, right? Yeah. Physical touch. You can feed them and they can have all of that food in their bodies, but if they're not getting the other side of it, they will die from lack of those things, right? So initially, that's what we look at with someone who might be doing food intolerances or allergies, that they have something from their past that they are not being able to process or digest, that very often relates to them feeling worthy of love and whether it was received or not received, even if it's a perception. Okay. That's like one of the first things. The other thing is very frequently there is a fear or anxiety or stress around life and situations. Will I be able to measure up? Will I be able to, you know, show up? And that often comes into like worthiness and am I good enough? And so some of the people with those like pretty severe programs or patterns that everything's being filtered, well, food too is going to be like not good enough. Food isn't going to come and be digested properly. And then another thing that food does is because food is cultural, food brings us together, right? Even if your family didn't get raised this way, it's almost in our DNA to sit down with people and have a meal together. So it's a way of connecting. It's another way of connecting. So,
which might I say in the last 5 years has been massively disrupted with the pandemic that happened. And then everyone's sitting in front of their television and no one sits at the table anymore. And everyone's on their devices and there's no connection anymore.
Right. And I can't tell you how many people I've worked with that some of their early childhood trauma actually is from the dinner table. From you sit, you finish all your food, all the rules. Don't leave an empty plate or eat your vegetables first. Or the whole, there's starving children in pick your developing country. And a lot of stories around the dinner table, a lot of fighting happening between the parents, that things are going on at the dinner table, the don't talk or all sorts of, there's a lot of rules, family rules that end up playing out at the dinner table that children are sitting. And so every time they think about sitting down in front of food, there's tenseness in their body. There's, oh gosh, what's it going to be like tonight? What's going to happen? Are they going to come after me? you know, am I going to get the negative attention, or is there going to be some sort of fight? Do I have to finish everything? Is it going to be a fight about what's on the, what's being served that I don't really want to eat? And then they're going to make it something about me and my being that I don't want to eat this and I'm not being grateful, and all kinds of labels happen. So the dinner table for who knows how many years has not been safe. And we could go way into that, this sort of the dissolution of the family unit when you've got parents working, both parents working, and dinner becomes like this rushed event and there's a lot of stress. And then you sit down and it's sometimes the first time all day the parents have sat down. They have not dealt with their stress from the day with all that they've carried in. And now the first point they're sitting down is at dinner. And they're holding all of it in, and it feels so intense for the little energetic sponges that are sitting around.
Even if they're not saying anything, even if they're not, yeah, mm-hmm. It's just, it's there.
Yeah, and food becomes linked with mm-hmm. this kind of instability.
Right.
And connection. So another very frequent driver for adults are people who lack boundaries. It's people who have not been very good about boundaries. And so food becomes a measure of control, a measure of creating boundaries. If I can't say no to anything and I just say yes and say yes and say yes, and I'm constantly helping other people and giving to other people, and I just am boundaryless, mm-hmm. food becomes a way of creating distance. But it's not my fault. It's the fact that I can't eat it. So, no, I'm sorry I can't go there. There's nothing for me to eat. I'm sorry I can't sit down with dinner with you people, because I can't eat what you're eating. And very frequently, some of these same people have that, like, I didn't get enough attention. So consciously, I'm prepping you guys out there for the kickback on this. You are not the kind of people who consciously are like, give me attention. I need attention. Someone look at me. Someone help me. Someone see me.
In fact, I would say more than not, there could be an embarrassment about it, or like, I don't really want to talk about it. I don't really want to go there because I can't. And you don't want the attention consciously.
But subconsciously, your inner child needs it. So to not be able to eat food and to be able to have to say, I can't have that. I can't have that. I need something special cooked for me. I need someone, a consideration for me, because I have this thing, I have this problem. And it allows them to get some of that attention, some of that nurturing, and some of that care through the food intolerance or allergy.
Okay.
So those are some of the things and the connections, those early connections to how we begin to develop.
That become coping strategies.
Yes, they become coping strategies, yeah.
Okay. All right. So then, like, we obviously know someone's not like faking it. They're not like, oh, I need attention. So the symptoms are real, obviously.
Super real.
And they've become more and more real. And then they get usually stronger and stronger, right? Things are limited more and more. So it's not just emotional. It actually is physical as well.
It turns physical. Yes. Just like all of my diseases were quote unquote real.
Blood tests and this and that. It's not like, oh,
I had x-rays. I had MRIs. Yeah. I had CAT scans. I had blood work. I had all these various measures mm-hmm. that said, this is real. This is happening in your body.
Okay.
So yes. And how many people have anaphylactic reactions or
legit
vomiting reactions, or, you know, swelling, they swell as a result of an allergy.
Or you eat something and you gotta go to the bathroom really bad, you know, like whatever it is.
Right. Or they suffer from inflammation for days afterwards or whatever. The physical symptoms are real. We're not saying that these things aren't real. We're saying how they got developed often has little to do with the food. Very little to do with the
food. But now it is about the food because of how it's linked.
Right, because it helps. So a lot of people I know this is one of my things. if I have to read every label and follow every protocol and be hyper vigilant about what we can have and what we can't have, and my kids have these allergies and everything like that, that gave me something to keep myself extremely busy. So I didn't have to look at myself and the deeper issues and the deeper problems and what might have been contributing. So I'm working very, very diligently and very hard to take care of myself and my family by making sure nobody gets some various bad, bad food that's going to have them have some bad, bad reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's me mothering, quote unquote, not in a healthy way.
Yeah.
But doing it. And then I don't have to look at my own stuff, deal with my own stuff. Now, that is not a conscious thing. I wasn't consciously thinking like, let me have all these food intolerances or make my kids have all these food intolerances so that I can not focus on me. Never. In fact, if someone would have said that to me, I'd have punched him in the face. Right. So no, not a conscious thing. This is a subconscious thing. And it is very common for that to be part of it as well.
Okay, good. So then, if this is something that is like actually is a real problem, it's developed into something real, is there, I mean, I'm skipping ahead for a moment here, but like just to give some people some hope and some, is there hope in quote unquote fixing this? Again, there's nothing wrong with the person. Their body's doing exactly what it needs to do. But it, yeah, is there anything there as far as like, can these things be overcome, or is it, no, it just gets worse and worse, or sometimes it just magically goes away, or like, I don't know, talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, we see things magically appear and then we see things magically resolve and go away magically. Of course, we don't believe that, but okay. Something that's really important for people to understand about our brain is that it's a meaning making machine and it's always looking to shortcut and conserve energy.
Yeah.
But it also makes links. So it links and links and links and links, and it's constantly linking. So very frequently, what people don't realize is that when an emotional trauma of some sort, or it could have been a physical trauma, happened, and either right before or right after they consumed food, frequently the brain will link the trauma to whatever food it was that they were eating at the time.
And you talk about this, I don't know if it's in the book or in the course, or we've just talked about it on a workshop, but clients that you've worked with, peanut butter allergy, you know, things like that. So,
right. So I tell the story. This wasn't actually a client of mine. This is a client of somebody else, but severe peanut allergy, anaphylactic peanut allergy. And it started when this, it was a gentleman, and it started with him, I think, when he was like 10, 9 or 10, something like that. And it was severe. You know, the kind that if someone had touched peanuts and then prepared their food, even after washing their hands and there was some peanut oil, like would have a major anaphylactic reaction. So we use Mind Change as we do. We track back. And this person had no conscious memory of this. But we got in, or this wasn't me, but they got into, after school, there was a major altercation with the parents, like an abusive situation that happened in front of the child. And so this was just coming up in some of the history, right? Of tracking back to what happened in this person's childhood. And he had not remembered that this had occurred. And it was asked, were you eating anything at the time? And he was like, oh my goodness, I was eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it was bam, that was the link. And the brain did, peanut butter's not safe because my parents are not safe in this, you know, situation. So you clear up all of that. And lo and behold, this anaphylactic reaction to peanuts resolved and had no more reaction anymore. So, and of course, testing that was done under supervision and everything. So it didn't, like, he didn't go out and have a spoonful of peanut butter right after that session, but it was, you know, reintroduced in small amounts over time, just to say that. But yeah, totally resolved. And we see this stuff happen a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, totally. Of course there's help. But what we need to understand, I don't think people really get and understand how much we link stuff like that, how the brain does that. We've seen all sorts of situations. I mean, even personally, I wouldn't call this an intolerance. I mean, you could have called it, I suppose, to beans. Since as early as I could remember, beans. And
immediate, like,
I would throw up. And my mom, for years, I tried to sneak it into things, thinking I was just like being difficult, and I would throw up. And so, you know, be like, there are beans in this. And that was a major aversion for me for years, like most of my life.
Yeah.
One of those things that like your whole family knows about you, right? And so I resolved that in me at a time where we were not doing very well financially. And I was like, everyone talks about eating rice and beans and I can't eat beans. And so I was like, I was determined. I was like, I need to be able to eat beans. And I resolved that and could completely eat beans.
And now?
Oh, I eat beans all the time.
You love beans.
I do. Yeah. We had beans for dinner a couple nights ago.
That's right.
So I, in doing the work that I did come across a memory that was in childhood of something that had been happening when I was eating chili, I think. Mm. So, and where I'm from, there's beans in chili. And so I did, now whether that was the initial trigger or not, I did some work around just clearing the aversion first. And then if anything came up, this is what came up, I dealt with it and I eat beans regularly.
I had the same kind of thing. And we'll get into more like specific foods in a moment, but spinach. So I was, man, I could not even, if I had a bite of it, I would throw up. I mean, I would just get really severely sick. So I would say I'm allergic to spinach, but like, I didn't, it was just like, it was crazy. So as I tracked back and worked through it and like, okay, like spinach is good. Like what's the problem? What's going on? Again, sort of clearing the aversion first and like the, what is it going to taste like, put in my mouth, all of that, clearing that, tracking back, recognizing, oh, this began. And I could track back numerous other memories when there was like massive, let's just say sick times for me because of this, but it started when I was a kid and we lived overseas. And there was a lot of change going on in my life. And I was put into this school that everyone spoke French. And I was just like very barely learning it. And there was a lot of environmental things that, you know, didn't feel as safe. And we had the option at that school, in elementary school, we had the option to go home. And there was like a 2-hour lunch break or whatever. So like every day. So I had the option to go home. This particular time, I think my parents had meetings or I can't remember what it was, but like I couldn't go home. I wanted to, but I couldn't. And at school, they end up serving spinach. Now, I had eaten spinach growing up. Like, I was like, I'm like Popeye. Like, it hadn't been an issue before. All of a sudden, boom, eat that, throw up. Oh, must have been a fluke. And then months later, something similar happened. And then throughout my teenage years, there were similar things until I dealt with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my first big diagnoses was celiac disease.
Yeah.
So, of course, wheat. I'm born in Kansas. That's where I was born.
What's in Kansas?
Amber waves of wheat, of grain. Like wheat is everywhere in Kansas.
Right.
Just fields and fields and fields and fields. Now, I eventually also stopped eating corn, which because I moved to Nebraska as a teenager, and that's where corn, just everywhere you look is corn. And so like there was a lot of unresolved history for me, obviously. And so to have wheat be, and that growing up, holy moly, we ate white bread and pasta, like
it was a lot. Staple meal.
It was a staple meal. Like whatever you could easily cook, you know, bologna on white bread, Wonder Bread, you know, or peanut butter and jelly or various things. So it made sense to me later. And I will tell you, I did celiac excellently. So you eat wheat your whole life, basically, and then now you can't have it anymore. And I felt a lot better. And personally, I still don't eat gluten. But when I was doing celiac disease...
But can you just go back to that for a second? Reasoning?
Well, yeah. Okay. Because it's one of those food items out there that I think is a Frankenfood at this point, that the way that wheat is developed, especially in the United States, the protein around it, which is the gluten, is so thick. Most people can't digest it well. It is not something I feel that I want to consume. But that is not how I felt before. Before, I felt like I couldn't have it, that it would hurt me, that it would...
It did. I mean, that's the whole thing.
Right.
It ended up producing that. We're like, there was like a possible cross-contamination and you would be sick for days.
Mm-hmm.
Not 4 days, many days. Like,
yes.
For days.
Well, I was told like if you even get a 0.1 milligram or something like that, it might have even been smaller. I don't remember the numbers now. That it destroys the stomach lining for a month. And it's going to take you a month to heal. And there can be all these different symptoms.
And it did.
Of course it did. I followed the rules, man. I was a good student. I would have nightmares about being cross-contaminated. Nightmares. Literally.
Yeah, I remember.
Freak out about, and I would wake up with stomach aches because I thought that I had gotten glutened in my sleep. Mm-hmm. Like I would dream about that and I would feel so sick. And I didn't want to eat out and I didn't trust other people's cooking.
They're like, oh, this is gluten-free.
And I was constantly getting cross-contaminated, right? Having symptoms. So of course, when all of this stuff happens and all of the mind change stuff happens, I realized I now have a choice. If I wanted to, I can work on all the stuff and clean up all the stuff. And I've cleaned up a lot of the drivers behind it, right? But I now it's an actual choice for me.
But I will say, just so our audience knows, like there's been times where, I mean, the cross-contamination, come on, like that's not even a, like you'll have things that have been cross-contaminated and you're like, whatever. And it doesn't affect you.
No, it doesn't affect
me
at all.
But also there's been times where we, you know, we've eaten something and you're like, oh, didn't realize that, and you find out later like, oh, actually that had wheat in it or flour in it or whatever. And there's no reaction. And so that's the difference, is like you've cleared the problem, the reaction, the drivers or whatever else. Now it's a choice rather than I can't. It's like, I don't really want to. And there's a lot of things like that it's not like I can't eat anything, but there's things that I'm like, no, I'm choosing not to eat this particular kind of food because I recognize that's probably not healthy for me, fast food or whatever.
And listen, that's one of those boundary things, because people have deep relationships with food.
Yeah.
They do not like when you say no to something. Mm. Like, I don't want to eat that. I'm choosing not to eat that. They're like, come on.
Food snob.
Just try it. Just have a little bite, just a little taste. Even when I was strongly doing celiac disease, the amount of people that would try to get me to just have a small bite of something, unbelievable. And I was like, you don't understand what it'll do to my system.
But now
I lacked boundaries.
Right.
And so the celiac really held a strong boundary for me because people don't like, we eat a particular way now that makes a lot of people like, for whatever reason, uncomfortable. I don't
especially
care
in
what
Texas
they think, but I'm not trying to say they need to eat a certain way, but it's just this like, they want you to consume with them. They feel like if you don't, there's some problem, like there's some judgment on them or whatever. And that's what I'm telling you. There's a romance around food. There's a spell around food. Hmm. So a lot of times if we aren't strong in our boundaries and someone's like, please eat this, just have a little bit, just a little bit. It's easier for us to say we have an allergy. Oh, and I'm allergic. I'm intolerant. I have an intolerance. Because our no's are not respected. And so, but when I speak out, I have an allergy or I have an intolerance, the body goes, oh, yes, for sure. Histamine. Like we'll produce some histamine and we'll make a reaction. So it listens. And so it's protecting us. It's helping us maintain boundaries.
And when you say us, you're not talking about us. You're talking about like people
not
in
us.
General.
Yes.
Like this is what happens.
I feel like I have such a more healthy relationship with food now. It's night and day.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to like, now it's just, what do I want? Like, what does my body want? What's good for me right now?
And now I want to nourish my body.
Yeah. Rather than like, I have to eat this way. I can't do that. I can't. It's like, I could eat that way if I want to. I choose to eat a certain way because it makes me feel good. Now, there's other people that are going to say, I eat this way because it makes me feel good. And it's like opposite of me. Great. Okay.
The problem is like the vilification of food.
Right.
That is really the problem. When we vilify a food group or an item, like I know I didn't eat sugar for so many years, probably 10 years. I didn't eat sugar. I was like, sugar is the bad guy.
Well, that was the whole thing. At that point, it was like, oh, candida. And if you have any sugar, it's going to create the overgrowth of yeast and all of that other stuff.
My bigger thing was hypoglycemia.
Oh, that's
because I had a very hard time regulating blood sugar.
I forgot about that.
Because of my relationship with my mother. That's it. That's where that stuff comes from. Watch my diabetes episode, okay? But not that mothers are to blame, nothing like that, but it's a nurturing thing. It's a sweetness. Where did you get your nurturing, your sweetness from? Mm. And if that was not the case when you were young, you will crave it and you will dysregulate it very frequently. And I, at one point in my life, ate a king-size thing of what are the cinnamony ones?
Fireballs?
No, that are squishy.
Oh,
Hot tamales.
Oh, hot tamales. I was thinking.
Hot tamales. Okay. I just had that little feeling on the back of my tongue. I loved me some hot tamales. But I ate an entire, I would frequently not feed myself, not take care of myself. And so I was on the way to a horse show and I ate a king size thing of hot tamales and I passed out driving. So then,
this is before I knew you.
Yes. Then I ended up in the hospital and they were like, oh, your blood sugar and hypoglycemia. And I would just pass out all the time. Like I'd be working and not eating and I'd pass out. And see, that's the nurturing. That's the taking care of myself and had massive blood sugar dysregulation. Mm-hmm. So I thought sugar was evil. And I was like, duh, sugar's the bad guy. And diabetes runs in my family. And so I vilified sugar. And all sorts of things. Holy smokes, did I have a whole list of bad, bad, bad foods that I would not eat.
Can we talk about then, just for a moment, the, let's just call it like the top common food, bad foods, allergies, and some of the root drivers behind those?
Right. Yes. Great. Okay. So let's take dairy.
Okay.
That's one of the common allergies or intolerances, right? A lot of people can't handle dairy. Now. I won't go into my personal preferences around dairy.
All right, hold on. Let me get your soapbox.
I know. I will stay off of a soapbox. And the fact that I don't think we were meant to eat dairy, but that's a whole other thing.
Oh, she said it.
That's another thing. But, oh boy, some people love their dairy. So for those people, and we should, listen, a little bit of dairy shouldn't hurt us.
Right. Regardless of like, we shouldn't have it. We should have it. Like
Our bodies should
be able to handle crazy. It really does. I mean, it handles crazy things. The amount of poisons that we ingest in our body and how it filters it out. Like our body is amazing.
Yes.
So regardless of that, like our body should be able to deal with that anyways.
It really should be.
Not that we should be able to.
Even though we weren't designed to be actually
whatever else
consuming it.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yes. Okay. So that again, because dairy often breaks down into sugar. So this is another thing connected to nurturing as a child. Did they get enough nurturing? And then, of course, think about it, dairy, milk. So were they bottle fed? And this is not a commentary on bottle feed versus breastfeed. That's not where I'm going with this. But the connection that happens between child and mother through breastfeeding.
The amount of hormones that are produced and passed and like healthy, good things, oxytocin, whatever else. But
again, not a commentary on this. And I know there are plenty, plenty, plenty of mothers and various things that there's good reasons that they were not able to breastfeed. But the bottle, giving the child the bottle and putting them on a form of formula is an early trauma to their system. The disconnect from the way their mouth moves, from the kind of antibodies that they're getting, the connection, the regulation that they get through that process is an early trauma, and it helps them feel like there's attachment issues. It sets the stage for that.
It can.
Now, that does not mean that
this equals that.
This equals that. It's not causation. It is one of the common drivers that there are, because there are plenty of children who were breastfed who had attachment issues as well.
Sure.
So it's really talking about the attachment issues. But what people often don't talk about is that bottle feeding can be an attachment trauma. Hmm. And so again, no judgment on that, just saying that's just the way that science breaks that down.
Okay.
And so there is abandonment, neglect, rejection, any of those things that were in early childhood can set the stage for us later on in life, creating an issue around dairy.
Anxious attachment kind of things can create that. Okay,
yes.
Great. What about gluten? I mean, we talked about it already in certain respects, but...
Right. Gluten, for whatever reason, often is connected to shame, rigidity, doing things right.
Wait a second.
Don't you mind change me? Yeah. Suppression of emotions, too high of expectations, perfectionism, that kind of stuff is very frequent in childhood. You know, there's various ways to get those feelings, but those are a lot of the emotional contributors behind having a gluten intolerance or celiac. So here's the thing. Celiac disease is sort of next level. It's like when our body levels up the communication, it'll do things a little more.
Right.
So sometimes there are drivers for celiac disease that might not be necessarily present for like a gluten intolerance.
Okay.
But overall, these are some of the drivers that contribute to both.
Okay, great. What about eggs?
Eggs is another very common one. Eggs typically is unexpressed emotions, unexpressed creativity. I always like to think metaphorically, right? So if you think about what's happening inside the egg, something's being created, like a life is being created and has to break out of the shell, right? And so this is often people that have kept themselves in, suppressed. They never did get to hatch, break out, be who they really were supposed to be. And I know it sounds crazy, but this eventually comes out somewhere. It has to have a voice for that somewhere. So it's like, let's not like eggs.
Yeah. I mean, again, all of these things, it's not like, oh, if you feel this way, this is the allergy you're going to have. Not necessarily. But if this is an allergy or a sensitivity you have, here are some possible major drivers that could, once cleaned up, eradicate that if that's something that you don't want to be allergic to anymore.
And I will say, I'm just giving you some really basic drivers. There's, right. I can provide
you can do a whole...
paragraphs for most of these, but yeah.
Okay. So soy and gluten, or not gluten, soy and corn.
Okay. Soy and corn are, just another form of non-nourishment. And if you think about it metaphorically, soy and corn are some of the most modified foods that we have currently. And so there is a little bit of toward modification of like, be something different. Who you are is not okay.
Okay.
What you are is not okay. So a little bit of that, I'm not good enough. It's not okay to be myself kind of a thing. Is frequently with that. Also that we don't trust ourselves, that we don't, we're disconnected from soul, from wisdom, from intuition is often related to a soy or corn allergy.
Okay. And I know there's a lot of other things that people are like, oh, what about this? And what about this? And maybe from this episode, people are going to be like, oh, what about like this particular whatever, right? And there's a lot of things, and we're not getting into all of that because this isn't about
the detail.
And
I will not be able to get back to
no, yeah.
Sorry.
The final one that we'll kind of dig into that is a common one that people often have issues with, sugar. So you talked about this, but
yeah, talked about sugar. Sugar is not always, but very frequently related back to the feeling around a mother's love. Around that sort of sweet, nurturing. Sometimes it can be the feminine, if it's a woman, and for a man, like a man having wounded feminine or a woman having wounded feminine relationships or a not a great relationship with feminines, men as well, that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. the sugar kind of represents that, more the feminine qualities and the sweetness. And it's why people crave sugar a lot, because we're craving tenderness and nurturing and love and care. And the energy that you get from that, you know, when mom's got your back and, you know, like she's your biggest fan kind of a thing.
You get dopamine hits from that. Yes. Which sugar gives you very quick, spiked, way too high dopamine hits.
But if you're getting it synthetically, yeah. Boy, you crash.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we're looking for that support, unconditional love, someone's got my back, but we're doing it through an artificial source. Mm-hmm. Not that sugar is artificial. I would rather have people have sugar than something like aspartame or diet anything, Diet Coke, evil, but sorry.
Parents, it's because the aspartame. To this, sorry, mom and dad.
Anything that's the diet, those things are. It's like giving you the sugar taste, but with none of the good things that come with, even the spikes of the happy. It is just creating. It's a neurotoxin for your brain.
Okay. So, aside from all of the different like soapbox type things, we could say. Again, the idea behind all of this that we're giving is that there's really good reason for allergies, intolerances, food things. There's very specific things. There's also broader things. So,
we didn't talk about nuts, did we?
Oh, no, we didn't.
Nuts is a huge one.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. Nuts is most related to a controlling authority figure. So having had a controlling authority figure in your life.
I just thought about I just thought about some friends and I'm like, oh yeah, I get that.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were not in control of their quality of life. So they had a very dominant force, usually a parent, not always. Sometimes it could be like a coach or a religious figure or even a friend, but very often there's a dominant controlling parent.
Or, and this is important for us to sort of state, is that remember that everything in our reality is perception.
Yes.
And so this is why in Mind Change, it's never, ever about blame or shame, mm-hmm. because we may say like, oh, well, your parent was this and this and this and that. And the person's like, yes, that's true. And I need to like, okay, great. But does that mean that we shame and blame the parent? No, we clean up the perceptions, the feelings. It doesn't matter if the parent was this way or if it was a complete perception. It's reality for the person that then that reality can create these food things, these, you know, all of that. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there.
So with nuts, I mean, obviously we've seen the nut allergies just skyrocket. And so another driver for nut allergies is that having like a, so you've got the authoritative, but you also can have the domineering or overprotective, very frequently mothers, but it can be the other way around too, that are highly anxious, highly controlling, but through fear and through overprotection, and they control in that way. Mm. So it isn't maybe a domineering authority figure. It can sometimes come through an overprotective, hypervigilant somebody. Like everything is dangerous and everything is not okay. And you've got to be careful and, you know, nitpicking all of the different things.
Still comes back to attachment things. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about different things that happen with adults, with their possible food problems and how they are often linked more times than not to something from childhood. And that doesn't necessarily mean it was triggered in childhood. Just it could be a building block of it. Right. But for a moment, can we talk about kids? Because not everything develops in adults from something that happened as a child. Oftentimes, especially nowadays, there are so many more kids with known common allergies mm-hmm. or uncommon allergies. Regardless, it's everywhere. So what's going on here?
Okay. So we rarely talk about kids in Mind Change because it has a direct correlation to their family environment. almost always. It could be a school environment, or another
community environment, church environment. Sure. Like it could be a number of different
things. But it is almost always family. And frequently we find people who initially like see that as a blame or a shame or, oh, you're trying to hold me responsible. Mm-hmm. And so we typically don't engage in talking about childhood illnesses or manifestations because of that.
Right.
So if you're going to listen to this next piece about children, only do so if you can regulate yourself and understand that, yes, you may be contributing, you may be the sole contributor to this, but we know that most people are doing the absolute best they can at the moment because of what they've known or what they're carrying in. Mm-hmm. Still, we hope to do better and know more and go further. But we are not saying that anyone out there is overtly, knowingly causing this.
Yeah, the way that I would hope that a parent, if you have a child who is doing a lot of allergies, one allergy, severe allergies, minor allergies, doesn't matter, and you are listening to this, which obviously you are, what my hope would be is to see it rather than as a, like, what are you saying? I did something wrong, or I'm not, you know, having a good relationship the way it needs to, or I've been overbearing, or rather than kind of come at from the defensive, what I would ask or encourage is to be able to notice perhaps something in me has facilitated, allowed for, and maybe not, but for my child to develop this kind of thing in the environment that I've created. But if I've created that environment, and that's a big if, then that means that I have the power to create a different environment. So rather than holding on to the shame and blame of like, oh, that my child's having a hard time because of me, well, I can actually create something different and powerful that can create a brand new, beautiful, safe environment for my kid to eradicate these things. Mm-hmm. That's the power that we hold. So I just want to put that out there.
And we did this.
Yeah, totally.
Our kids were, I mean, at one point, gosh, I remember, especially Savannah, like couldn't eat anything. I think cauliflower was like the one safe food she could eat and of course didn't like. So we did that to our kids too.
Yeah, we did all of these. I remember back in the day, we did all of these like allergy tests and did all, yeah, there was a lot of different things. And it was like, oh, you can't, you're allergic to vitamin A. I'm like, wait, what? You know?
I mean, allergic to everything.
Yeah.
And what I would say is what they were allergic to was their home environment. There were things.
Wait, what are you saying about the way I parented?
The way we parented, my dear.
Yeah, no, it's we did the best we could. And yeah, there was a lot of overbearing, a lot of control. A lot of it needs to be this way. Mm-hmm. Love and joy and, you know, but our desire for peace was very mandated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were doing our own versions of food things. And mm-hmm. And I will say, as a mother who worked really hard to try to help my children feel better, I can know that it can sound like, oh my gosh, are you trying to say that my kid who swells up if they've get anywhere near is somehow my fault and it's that our family environment isn't okay? I get that, because you spend so much time and so much energy trying to protect your child by keeping them away from the thing.
Well, and you're buying special foods and you're, you know, packing certain things and you're making sure, I mean, there's so much time and energy that you really do care.
Yeah, clearly. Like, for sure.
And that's good.
It is. And yet the child isn't, their system isn't lying. And that's why we're seeing so many more children with these aversions and allergies and intolerances, is because their little bodies are sounding boards. They're unfiltered sounding boards for this. They don't lie. And that their bodies are saying, I'm allergic to the either what's happening in my family, to the way that I feel, to the way that you're loving me.
Or even just the way something happened. Maybe it's just a one-time thing. Fine.
Totally. It could be a one-time thing. It could be something that's happening at school, mm-hmm. and these links are happening. It could be that they don't feel safe out in the world, and therefore they provide their little bodies be like, okay, well, if I can't have this and I can't have this, I have to stay closer in. I have to stay closer to mom, closer to dad. Yeah. They have to be protecting me more. This is the way I'm getting the love and the attention that I need.
Completely subconscious, obviously.
Completely subconscious. And good job, body, child, subconscious, to be getting the needs met.
Yeah.
Could we be doing it even better? That's the question.
I would say it like the doing it better is you can use, I would say, even less energy and less time, but instead of focusing all that energy on like, I'm doing this for them, I'm trying to protect them in this way, like if you just kind of move it over here and utilize that same energy into something different, that environment that can create a different environment for their children, wow, like that actually could be the answer.
And if you think about it, I thought about this after miraculously, after I got well, the children's food allergies and all their little things that they were doing, like resolved, went away. We weren't seeing the same kind of reactions in them. I didn't purposefully stop doing their allergies. I was just busy dying and doing deeply in my own stuff. Mm. But me getting well all of a sudden helped them to be well. But I thought about it later and thought, oh my goodness, how hard on their little systems. Because our narrative was that certain foods and environments were dangerous. Mm. And it would be like, wait, you didn't eat that, did you? Wait, you didn't, oh, you're going to a party? You need to make sure that this, and we have to pack special food, and you have to bring this. And it just othered them.
They were the odd man out.
And they didn't want to be special in that way. They didn't want to be special because something was wrong with them.
Right.
They wanted to be special like every human being does because they're good.
And they are special.
And they're just special and they're unique and all these things, not because there's something wrong with them,
right?
Because of all these wonderful things about them uniquely. And so the fear and the vigilance that we perpetuated about food, and they got into this like, is this safe? Is this safe? And people make jokes about Savannah when she was very little, like 3 or 4, is this gluten-free? Like she would ask if things were gluten-free.
Us that like really instilled that kind of like fear mentality.
So that food isn't safe, that she needs to be so careful, that the world isn't safe, that people might not be safe I remember her third grade teacher, I can't remember, as a reward for Savannah's behavior, took her to McDonald's and got her a milkshake and French fries. And the French fries have a wheat coating on them. And they also,
it wasn't a milkshake,
shake,
it was a smoothie. But the
but it had dairy in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And oh man, Savannah got so sick. And we freaked out. And then it's like, that is so sad. That was the result of her being chosen for this really special thing and being taken out and given this reward.
That we freaked out, that she didn't feel well, that all
and the teacher got
stuff
in trouble, yeah. You know, like, because there was notes in her file and all of these various things. And it just made me think like, yeah, no wonder their bodies continued to do like food vigilance because we created that unsafe environment. Mm. And that's really what their little bodies are telling us is, they want to live in a world that's safe, that people are safe, that food's safe, that our water is safe, and unfortunately, there are a lot of not nice things in those products. But how we choose to deal with it and our outlook on it, and my goal is to get my body so rock star that it could handle anything that I put in it, because the majority, not so that I can then go for it out and put yucky stuff in it. That because we live in a world where that stuff's all around, I want my body in tip-top shape that it gets a hold of something like that. And it's like, hey, I got you. This is why we have kidneys. Mm. This is why we have many stages to the digestion process and the gut and all these abilities to do these things and flush things out. I got you. I got you because you've got me all the time. I got you on this.
Yeah.
That relationship with my body is what I'm looking to be my actual protection.
Well, and let me just say that is really the, yes, with your body, but then as we're talking about children and parents, like that's the same thing of like, hey, I got you. You're good. Everything's good. Everything's safe. Like you're fine. Which then instills something, which I will say we have both seen in many, many, many clients where we're working with parents. The parents deal with their stuff, whatever that is. And it's not about, oh, my child has an allergy. Let me work on that. That's not what it's about. It's just, we're working on anxiousness, we're working on their relational issues, we're working on trauma, we're working on anger, we're working on whatever the parent is holding. And so often we do hear stories later on, months later, you're like, oh yeah, like once I resolved these things, like my kids started like they're better, and oh, they're not doing this allergies anymore, and they're not doing these intolerances anymore, and all of a sudden they're not doing this, maybe it's not food stuff, but like they're not doing these obsessive compulsive behaviors anymore. They're not doing, because when the parent changes their personal environment of like, hey, I've got me, then all of a sudden it translates and the kid's like, oh, you've got me. Mm-hmm. And that's what they need when they're little. And then they know the world's got me, I've got me, and it translates like that.
And I will say this is actually the resolution of food intolerances and allergies is a side effect often in mind change.
Right, exactly.
Some people have come in with an allergy and wanted to resolve that. And that's what they wanted to work on. But so many other people come in for other stuff and they do the work and they're like, oh my goodness. So want to tell you this, that I used to be allergic to this thing, like had a massive allergy to it. I'm thinking of a particular person who was very allergic to pineapple, like almost like a, not anaphylactic, a little bit would swell up, tongue would swell, throat would swell, mouth would get all wonky. I didn't even know that actually. I didn't even know, never brought it up, but did a lot of work on some other stuff and happened to get pineapple in a fruit salad and ate it without a problem. And then was like, my pineapple allergy is gone. Mm. And so this, I've heard this from a lot of people. I couldn't eat this before. Nuts, pineapple, peaches, tomatoes,
gluten.
Shrimp. Yeah, gluten. Like people just, it's often a side effect of cleaning up other stuff.
Yeah.
And that's because the brain has linked these things. So sometimes we're healing allergies without realizing we're even working on those things.
Okay, so kind of getting into all of that, obviously the solution for children isn't just to manage their diet, it's the whole ecosystem. But as we're kind of moving forward and talking about the changes that can happen, rewiring the response.
Mm.
Talk about this idea of, okay, what is the mind change approach? And we've talked about it for the last hour, but what specifically is the mind change approach as we are dealing with food allergies, intolerances, things like that?
Well, it's one of the reasons that I brought up the whole idea that it's a side effect, because very frequently you might be putting all of your attention on this food allergy or this thing, but it's other stuff. It's programs and patterns, and very frequently our relationship with love and nurturing and relationships in general.
Isn't that what the whole thing is when people come in to mind change? Like, here's the problem. Here's the issue. And I would say 9 out of 10 times, the issue is simply the symptom.
Sure.
So when we're going after something in session work or going after something in whatever, it's great. I'm glad that's a problem for you. We'll deal with it. Let's go deeper.
Yeah.
You deal with the deeper stuff, and those quote unquote problems that you had that you came in for go away.
And I said this before, but I'm guaranteeing there are people out there listening. Food allergies and intolerances are a gateway symptom.
Explain that.
It's one of the first steps. Maybe at other times it's like the third or fourth step on the chronic illness journey. You will restrict to the point where now you've got other things going on. Now you're going to do leaky gut. Now you're going to do H. pylori. Now you're going to be doing gut dysbiosis. Then you're going to be doing celiac, or, you know, these are all the next level, next level, next level, next level. And it just, so it's these, it's very frequently food allergies or intolerances are early messaging. And, but people, the way they start listening is by not listening. They restrict, which then is just keeping us further from our body. It's just starving our body more from the very thing it needed in the first place.
And maybe it's not the allergy or the intolerance at first, but it's like, my body hurts in this way, or my body has this problem. And then they outsource and go to, oh, if I change my diet, if I do this with food, and then you restrict. And it's the same thing. So I'm just saying that, like, it can come from different angles.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I would, if someone finds themselves on that journey or on the beginning of that journey, you will, this is one of those things that you'll find 500 resources to support the fact that you should cut this particular food out and it's going to solve all your problems.
But then the next year you'll find 500 other resources that says that's the exact food you should be bringing into your diet and something else is what you should be cutting out.
The answer is not in the consumption or restriction of food. That's just not the answer.
Okay, wellness. What's the answer?
It's emotional wellness. It's holistic wellness. You get your mind right, which gets your nervous system right, which allows your body to do rest and digest at times. You will digest food just fine. That's not really the problem. The body feeling broken, it's not working right. That's part of the problem, is that the way we see the body, it's not the answer to starve it more, to take more things away from it. That's the same thing that happened as a little person, is things were taken away from you that you really needed. The thing you needed most was what you weren't given. And you may have been given all these other fillers in the process, and it didn't really meet that complete need. And so many people are emotionally malnourished. And it's translating into these problems in our body. So we need to refeed, re-nourish emotionally, and stop replaying these things that have happened to us in our mind. Not because they, you know, we're not to blame or shame or all of that stuff, but to, like, if it's replaying and it's causing your body to go into hypervigilance or dysregulation, change it. You might not have been able to change it then, but you can change it now. And very frequently addressing those early needs that were unmet, and the stories that we tell ourselves, and the unraveling of that is part of the re-nourishing process.
Yeah, get rid of the junk food memories.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's not nourishing your body. Change those and start nourishing yourself back then, and you will not want to fill yourself with junk food, or at least even the food that you eat that may not be considered that, it won't digest as waste, junk food, poison, all of that, because now we are nourishing ourselves the way that we want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's really the answer. And of course there's hope, because this is a side effect of Mind Change. So it can be done. It's done so often. We have tons of stories of things being resolved. But because people asked, which thank you all for asking. Thank you for telling us what you want us to cover.
Yeah.
We really appreciate that. And I know we were in this. We were thick in this for years. Did everything under the sun. And so I really believe that our relationship with food needs to be intuitive, but for it to be intuitive, we've got to clear out all the filters, all the attachments, all the links that we may not even know are there.
Amazing.
Yay. Excellent.
Thanks for the conversation today.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. And thank all of you for joining us once again on the Mind Change Podcast. Please take a moment to like, subscribe, share, download, send this to somebody else who might be on a food intolerance journey, and just help us to reach more people so that we can continue to change the world one mind at a time.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Mind Change Podcast. We hope that you found the insights and inspiration shared today valuable in your own journey of personal growth. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Or if you're watching us on YouTube, please like and follow us there. And we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a 5-star rating and review. It has measurable impact on how well we're able to reach others and continue to produce more free content to share. But mostly, thank you for taking this time as an opportunity to invest in yourself. Until next time, let's keep changing the world one mind at a time.